This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll spend much of the hour with Jim Brown, the former insurance commissioner, former secretary of state, former state lawmaker, and longtime Louisiana political follower. He'll have his observations about what's going on in our state and across the country, and these are interesting times. And it is election time, a mayor's race in New Orleans this coming Saturday, with one Landrieu on the ballot, and then come November, another Landrieu will be on the ballot as Mary Landrieu seeks a fourth term in the U.S. Senate. Also on the show, we'll spend some time with Ann Duplessis, LSU Board of Supervisors member and head of the Louisiana Federation for Children, and we'll talk about what's going on with her organization. This is National School Choice Week. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. In just a few minutes, we'll hear from Jim Brown, the veteran Louisiana politico whose keen insights are sought after by many, including us, and we'll get his take on what's happening in the political world and what's going to occur in our state in 2014. But first, it's LSU board member Ann Duplessis, who is head of the Louisiana Federation for Children. Good morning, Senator Duplessis.
How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a big week for you as far as your group, the Louisiana Federation for Children. A scholarship application period opened for students a few weeks ago. How is this progressing?
Oh, it's doing absolutely wonderful. The just so that, you know, our listeners are aware that the application period began on January 13th, and it's going to run through February 28th. So we still have some time for those families who are interested in applying for one of the scholarships.
Now, how do the scholarships work?
Well, the parents of the students must be, you know, at a certain income. There is an eligibility requirement. They have to be at a certain income level. And if they are entering, if they're already in school, the schools that they are registered to attend, the public schools, must be considered a failing school, which is graded C, D, or F. If this child is entering kindergarten, there's some different requirements.
So you, let's say, it's safe to say, are an advocate of school vouchers.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, what this is, it's not necessarily just vouchers, but using the resources that are available and that are mandated by the state to provide quality education for every child in our state. Using those resources and allowing parents to choose how best to educate their kids. That's what School Choice Week is about. It's not about just vouchers, but it is about the ability to choose how best my child will learn.
It is National School Choice Week, and Senator Ann Duplessis, who was in the Louisiana legislature from 2008 to 2012, and is a member of the LSU Board of Supervisors, is an advocate for school choice, a Democrat from New Orleans. Some say this is an assault on the public education system. How do you respond?
I think that is just a them versus us mentality. And no, it is not an assault on the public school system. At the end of the day, this is about individual children, people who are put in or who are in situations or in environments that are just not productive. And what we've seen is that this movement or this approach as to being innovating on how kids are educated in today's society, in today's environment, it is actually raising the bar for all forms of education, public schools, Catholic schools, private schools. All forms of systems are now having to raise the bar in order to compete and to survive.
So how do you see the public school system surviving in the years to come?
I think the free market will dictate. If you are giving a quality piece, There are many good public schools, and if your school or if the process that you have put together to educate kids or educating kids and families and families are pleased with the outcomes, then it will survive. If it doesn't produce what we expect and what we require, then it shouldn't survive. And that's the bottom line, because it's not about a system that we're trying to protect. It's about children we're trying to protect.
297-5633, 877-217-5757. Those are your numbers. A few more minutes with Senator Ann Duplessis, who heads the Louisiana Federation for Children. And this is National School Choice Week, and she is advocating the scholarship program that was unveiled by Governor Jindal, embraced by the legislature, and is now obviously in existence in Louisiana despite some court challenges. Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air with Senator Duplessis.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Senator. Senator, you know that the motto for Louisiana is union, justice, and confidence. Senator, was it just to mandate public school children take the LEAP exams and exit exams and exempt private schools and Catholic schools? And as a member of the LSU board, why did you approve a contract with blank pages in it for the health care issue that the governor sent over? Thank you.
Well, first, let me take your last question first. We did not approve a blank contract. We are well versed on everything and that we are doing at on the LSU's board. But the call today and the focus today are our kids, our and the scholarship program and at school choice. So if you are familiar with the way this program does work, we do require testing of our kids who are the kids who are going through are using scholarships. So they are not exempt from testing, if that's what I heard you ask.
Do they have to take the LEAP tests?
Yes.
Okay. Kevin and Zachary. Kevin, you're on with Senator Duplessis.
Good morning. How are you today?
Fine.
Good morning.
I like to preface my comments by saying I get so angry to hear about this school voucher thing, because all it does is siphon from the public school system. There were two points that you made. You said that the school system is supposed to support 100% of the students. The second point, you said that the public schools are part of the fair market or the free market system. On the contrary, this school voucher system only supports about 1% of our student population. And if you have the idea that our school systems are part of the free market system, then that explains why you have no intent to support them.
All right. Would you respond to Kevin? Thank you,
Yeah,
Kevin.
And, you know, I guess I understand you're not truly understanding the impact of what this is to do. What you really ought to be getting outraged and mad at is that our kids aren't learning. That's what you ought to be getting outraged at, and helping us to identify solutions outside of protecting something that hasn't worked for the last 30 years. So get outraged that your kids aren't reading, that your kids, you know, aren't learning, and they're not being able to compete in this global economy going forward. That's what we ought to be getting outraged at.
James on airline. James, good morning. You're on with Ann Duplessis.
Thank you. I have two quick questions for your guest. The first is how much she's being compensated for her support of the voucher system. And the second goes back to something she suggested. I would like one example of a voucher-supported school that is actually doing something measurable that's innovative.
I think that we have many success stories, which I can't begin to talk about right now because we'd run out of time. We're at a school this morning in New Orleans, St. Leo the Great, which is a voucher-supported school, and it is doing fabulous things. The kids here are actually doing wonderful, and the scores are doing absolutely fabulous. I would encourage you to go on our website, www.lascholarshipprogram.com, or www.louisiana.com. 4, the number 4, children.org, And there are many examples of how of the success stories that that have occurred and that are occurring with this program.
And your position, is it a paid position?
My position is a part-time, small paid position to cover expenses as I travel throughout the state. I travel on my own dime, and I'm reimbursed expenses.
Are you paid more or less than you were as a state lawmaker?
Oh, less. Absolutely less.
Okay. Tabitha, where is she calling from? Tabitha?
And remember, as a state legislator, I was only paid a base of $16,500.
All right. Tabitha in Baton Rouge. Tabitha, you're on the air with Senator Duplessis.
Hi, Senator Duplessis. I have kind of a question and a statement about Hosanna Christian Academy in East Baton Rouge that took on, I believe, 350 voucher students this year. I happen to know that most of their teachers are not certified, and they don't do anything about this. I enrolled my daughter in this school this year. She is not on a voucher, and they are not learning any more than the public schools are.
All right. Do you know anything about this particular school?
I do not know. I cannot say that I am aware that that they are not learning, and it's very difficult sometimes to. I think it's not fair sometimes to, because one particular child may not be learning at the level that you would expect for you to couple every single child in that environment.
What about certification of teachers? Is that
a
requirement?
Well, the norm, it is, and to my understanding, for private school or Catholic school, they are not required, and I cannot be held to this, but I don't believe they are required to have certain levels of certification. I am not sure of that, so I really would not like to speak on that. But let me ask you, at the end of the day, when you look at that school and the kids that have come out of that school, have they gone on to high school and have they gone on to college? And so when you look at what the outcomes of the environment and the other things that you have to take into consideration when your children are in school, what are the other things that are part of their educational world that creates a better child, creates a better citizen?
Well, for those who have an interest in the scholarship program, what's the best way to contact the Federation for Children?
Again, you should go online to www.louisianaforchildren.org or www.louisianascholarshipprogram.com. And again, it runs through February 28th.
Mildred on Lee Drive, you'll be our final caller for Senator Duplessis. Mildred, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. I don't think the question was raised regarding the separation of church and state. That's my question.
As far as these
as far
voucher
as
schools?
Yes.
Okay. Is that something that is in place?
I don't know. I mean, that's such a broad question. I think you would have to be a little bit more specific on what you're asking.
Well, if they're getting public funds, then there should be separation of church and state. Do we have that assurance?
That has I can't tell you if we have that assurance or not. At the end of the day, you have public funds that are being used to educate our kids regardless. And let me just say that if you look at some of the other things, such as public funds being used at the college level, university level, through Pell Grants and things like that, that can go to a public university or a private university. You ask the same question. Why are there double standards? Why is it okay for us to use those public funds in a private university?
Well, Senator Duplessis, we thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to talking with you sometime very soon.
And I just hope that those people who really want to understand more about the program and how much it benefits our children would please go on our website and get more information.
Back in 90 seconds with Jim Brown. This is Jim Engster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. If you're calling outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. Engstershow@WRKF.org. Congratulations to Terrence Simeon, who was on the show a few days ago and won a Grammy last night in Los Angeles. Jim Brown is with us, former world champion track star and world champion of Louisiana politics for many moons. He won, let's see, one, two, three, four, five. Was it five statewide elections or six?
Six statewide elections.
And
few on the local level. So I've been around the block a few times, Jim. And you mentioned the track. That was I was a pretty swift guy about seven belt notches ago in the waist. I could really get around real well. But as so many of us, we get a little older, and I do my best to stay healthy.
Well, you were on the same relay team with Bullet Bob Hayes and Paul Warfield.
That's right, and Ralph Boston, who was the world record holder in the broad jump. I handed off to the fastest man in the world, Bob Hayes, and tell you what, I was always very apprehensive. I was giving it my all, but I hated to be left in the lurch, and we worked many, many hours on our handoffs back. This is back in the 60s. This is 62 and 63 when I was on the U.S. team, and so it was a real treat to run then, and wish I could still lope along now.
Well, you've been running ever since, according to some.
That's true. Yeah,
different kind of running. Well, speaking of, Saturday in New Orleans, a mayor's race, Mitch Landrieu, a heavy favorite for re-election. Is he going to win?
Let me say that this is an interesting beginning cycle. In most states around this country, they'll have a major election cycle once every 4 years. On the ballot will be the president, U.S. senators, congressmen, mayors, everything like that. We in Louisiana start a three-tier system where we start on Saturday that goes in then to the congressional elections and then to the gubernatorial elections. As far as Landrieu, now, you know, I'm not into the minutiae of New Orleans politics, but I certainly watch it very closely. I think that Mayor Landrieu has done a credible job, been endorsed by most the papers down there, and I think he's going to win fairly solidly. It's going to be an indication, I think, his victory as to what happens with this domino effect in other elections. But Landrieu's done, like I say, done a creditable job. The city, he also has the advantage of following Ray Nagin, the former mayor, who's goes on trial, I think, today, if not today, tomorrow.
It is today.
And so as a consequence, when you look at what he's done and you compare it to this last guy who was just a total disaster, anybody who was in office at this stage would look pretty good. So he has that advantage. But on top of that, I think he's done a creditable job. When you're an incumbent, money is the mother's milk of politics. He's raised much more money than the other candidates, and I think he's going to win pretty solidly in the first primary.
Well, another native of New Orleans is in the news, and that's David Bruce Vitter, who is a native of New Orleans, unlike Mary Landrieu, who, by the way, was born in Virginia. But David Vitter was born in New Orleans. In fact, he's the only U.S. senator born in New Orleans in quite some time. He may be the only one ever, but at any rate, now he wants to be governor of Louisiana.
Well, Judah Benjamin, I think, who was very Civil War, active lawyer, was a U.S. senator
from New Orleans.
You pulled
out Judah Benjamin. Hats off to Jim Brown. In the 20th or 21st century, there may not have been a senator born in New Orleans. But David Vitter was.
And if you want to talk about someone who's a survivor, it's David Vitter. He had a major scandal in his past, survived that, easily reelected as a U.S. senator, and has done a pretty creditable job in Washington. If you're a moderate, if you're a Democrat, you've got to at least give the devil his due if you don't like David Vitter. And what I mean by that is he's reached across the aisle on prescription drugs being imported from Canada, on some other health care concerns. I had a guest on my radio show yesterday, my national show, we were talking about Wall Street. And he said one of the major reformers of trying to get Wall Street out of bed with Washington, D.C. is Senator Vitter working with a guy named Sherrod Brown, a senator from up in Ohio who's a very liberal Democrat. So Vitter, in his effort to change his image and redeem himself, has reached across the aisle and done some pretty effective things in Washington. So I don't coronate him like some folks have, saying he's going to be the next governor. My friend Sammy Hanna, who has a series of newspapers up in North Louisiana, said it's just Vitter's to lose. I don't think that's true at all, but he's certainly the front runner and going to be a major focus in this governor's race next year.
By the way, Judah Benjamin was born a British subject in 1811 in St. Croix.
Well, he was a lawyer in New Orleans, the Benjamin Law Firm down there. So, well, I was close.
But most folks think Mary Landrieu was born in New Orleans, and she was not. She's a Virginian. She's not born in this state, but certainly is synonymous with New Orleans, and she should be. She grew up there. Her dad was elected mayor when she was 14 years old. Mitch Landrieu, of course, followed his father, who is still alive and well, Moon Landrieu. And for him, I think the big plum in Louisiana politics is a mayor's office in New Orleans, which he has. Now, there are some, including James Carville, who reportedly are trying to encourage him to run for governor next year, presuming he's going to win this Saturday. Would he jump in the governor's race, and would he be formidable if he did?
Well, I think that's going to be decided here next week in the election. If he wins very handily, then he'll certainly be a formidable force, maybe as a candidate, but also as a power broker behind who ends up being governor and other statewide officials. I think I don't think he's just going to get elected mayor and then flip around 1 year later. I think it'll disappoint a lot of his folks down that way. And, you know, the mayor of New Orleans, probably next to governor, is the strongest office in this state. He's kind of the king of the mountain in New Orleans. I think he thrives on the job. So my guess is he will not, particularly when the Democratic Party, despite what James Carville says, is probably at the lowest ebb that I've ever seen in my political career. I've never seen the Democratic Party less organized and less effective than it is now. So I think he's going to weigh that, see that Louisiana is a red state, know he could be a viable candidate, probably get in the runoff, but then lose closely in the runoff. So I don't see him winning, but I think he'll be a major power broker in terms of whether some other Democrat mm-hmm. or some other moderate Republican ends up being elected governor.
297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, and Inkster Show at WRKF.org for Jim Brown, longtime Louisiana politico, the father of Campbell Brown. How is she doing?
She's doing wonderful. She's not on CNN anymore. She was on both the host of the Today Show on NBC and CNN had her own show for years. She's now writing about education. She's very involved in New York, has her own foundation, travels the country. She was down here for an educational conference some months ago. And so she's traveling the country talking about younger kids, preschool education, and the quality of education in our schools. And as I say, has her own foundation, writes regularly for both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, and enjoying raising her kids. So she's doing super, and I'm obviously a very proud father.
Okay. Ernie at LSU asks if you've had your law license restored.
Yes, I did. I had it restored years ago, and have never really practiced law, but I do some pro bono work for some friends from time to time or someone that needs some help. I drew up a fellow stopped me in the street and said he needed a power of attorney. I got talking about his compelling story, and I sat down last night and drew a power of attorney for him just gratis. So I don't practice a lot of law. I enjoy doing a little bit about what you're doing, Jim, writing columns and that kind of thing. But, yes, I've had my law license for a number of years.
297-5633, so you could call Jim Brown, attorney at law, if you had a problem. And here's a story that was in the Picayune, actually the Advocate yesterday. I still associate James Gill with the Picayune. He now works for the Advocate. He says, as of last year, we had 1,372 citizens in Louisiana in prison for simple possession of marijuana. 1,372. The average sentence, 8.4 years, and 10 of the people in prison for possession are in for life, thanks to multiple offenses. So, life for possession of marijuana in Louisiana for 10 people, and 8.4 years, the average sentence for those who are incarcerated for possession of pot. 78% of those are black people. What's going on in Louisiana when you compare us to, say, Colorado?
Well, there are five states now that have moved towards, really 14 states that have municipal marijuana for medical purposes. And by the way, Governor Jindal said last week that he would take a good look and maybe be responsive to making marijuana legal for doctors to prescribe here in Louisiana. So that's a step forward, quite frankly. That's a tough call, particularly if you put aside the some of the personal feelings, but you look at what happens with marijuana. I've read a great deal about about it, and people compare it to alcohol. Let's take smoking, for example. If you quit smoking after 7 or 8 years, your lungs are cleared out. And I was a lawyer involved in a lot of tobacco litigation. If you smoke marijuana over a period of time, the damage is permanent. You know, there's brain damage there that's permanent, so you do a great deal of damage to yourself. I think smoking marijuana is terrible for you, just like drinking is terrible for you. I don't drink and I don't smoke. But there are choices involved when you come down to, you know, my philosophy is more of a libertarian, and I think you ought to have those choices. Obviously, sticking people in jail for life for possession of marijuana is ridiculous. And there is a movement in Louisiana, we're always a little behind the curve, to loosen up those requirements. I don't like marijuana. I think it's bad for you. But as far as those types of tough sentences, we're completely out of line in doing that kind of thing, wasting massive resources on rehabilitation that doesn't take place. And so we need to take a good, hard look at all of our drug laws.
But life in prison for possession of marijuana.
Well, that's probably multiple distribution. You know, you can say, you know, I saw some guy got arrested for his 8th DWI here about 3 weeks ago, I believe down in Ascension Parish. What happened to 3, 4, 5, and 6? You know, there's got to be a wake-up call there somewhere. So usually a guy like that has repeatedly sold and sold.
I'm with you there. That person should go to jail for life or worse. But marijuana, possession of marijuana, life
in
prison?
Well, I think it's probably distribution. I imagine it's repeated distribution.
According to Mr. Gill, it's possession. But it is multiple
that
offenses.
Would be just ridiculous. That would be absurd. And as I say, we're not doing any rehabilitation. Obviously, the message is not going out. Our young people are smoking marijuana. The president says he's done it. The last president said he's done it. And the president before him said he's done it.
But he didn't enjoy it.
That's right.
And he didn't inhale. All right. Here's a story. Eric Lawson, working actor who portrayed the Marlboro Man in cigarette ads during the late 70s, has died, 72. Died of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Surprise, surprise. Smoking, according to the President of the United States, smoking cigarettes may be infinitely more harmful than smoking pot. Why don't we do something about cigarettes? Should we outlaw them?
What you're doing is just taking poison right into your lungs. Now, again, you come down to choices, though, individual choices. Because at what point does that stop to where government tells you what you can or can't do? And that's a real tough balance along that line. I think you give no quarter. I think you give no tolerance when it comes to kids under 21. I think that in terms of smoking, in terms of marijuana, anything like that, I think it just tears up your system. You get to be 25 or 30, should you have those personal choices? Do you have municipal marijuana for health purposes? Those are tough questions that up till now we've not really dealt with. I tend to be more on the liberal side mm-hmm. along that line. I think you ought to have medical marijuana. And quite frankly, for the pot, although it's terrible for you, we shouldn't be sending people to jail for that kind of thing.
Well, a few weeks ago, Governor Jindal was before the Baton Rouge media at the press club, and he, on the St. George situation, he said, well, I am on many other issues. I think the people should decide. The people should decide. It should be their choice. We should have freedom. But if you were to ask Governor Jindal, you or I or anybody else, about his opinion about same-sex marriage or about abortion, I imagine he would not want the people to decide. He wants to decide.
Well, these social issues, quite frankly, are killing the Republican Party nationally. I mean, it's just a question of individual choice in terms of government. And you know, my evangelical friends who cite the Bible, you can go to the Bible where there's passage after passage after passage where the scriptures say, keep government out of people's personal lives. So you get down to these individual choices. I think the governor is dead wrong. I think, look, that's just your choice. You know, you know who's coming here to perform in 2 weeks is Kinky Freeman. Kinky Freeman is got third in the governor's race in Texas.
Yeah, he's been
his
on
most
show.
Famous song is "They Don't Make Jews Like Jesus Anymore." He's a Jewish guy and great singer. Big buddy Willie Nelson. When he ran for governor, they asked him, "What do you think about gays getting married?" And he says, you know, I got no problem with gays getting married. They ought to be just as miserable as the rest of us. I just think it's time that, look, I got some strong personal opinions about how I live my life, how I want my family to live my life, but tell the government to leave me alone and stay out of my business.
All right. Well, Here's former governor Mike Huckabee, who ran second to John McCain. Remember that, second to John McCain, and a respectable second at that in 2008 for the Republican nomination for president. Here's Governor Huckabee, now a Fox television talk show host, on his opinions regarding the Democratic Party and the Democrats' approach to women.
Women I know are outraged that the Democrats think that women are nothing more than helpless and hopeless creatures whose only goal in life is to have the government provide for them birth control medication. Women I know are smart, educated, intelligent, capable of doing anything that anyone else can do. Our party stands for the recognition of the equality of women and the capacity of women. That's not a war on them, it's a war for them. And if the Democrats want to insult the women of America by making them believe that they are helpless without Uncle Sugar coming in and providing for them a prescription each month for birth control because they cannot control their libido or their reproductive system without the help of the government, then so be it. Let us take that discussion all across America, because women are far more than the Democrats have played them to be. And women across America need to stand up and say, enough of that nonsense.
It's not what Mike Huckabee said, it's how he said it, I think. If you look at what he said about, basically what he said was women being left alone to make their own choices, but then he throws in and says that government can't provide certain things. He's a little inconsistent along that line, but it's how he said it, and of course that's the problem with the Republican Party in terms of, you look at the polls, there's such a huge disparity of women voters towards Democrats, and it's some of the rhetoric that comes from Mike Huckabee and others that show that sharp divide. If you listen word for word to what he said, it wasn't all that bad, but the way he said it was an affront to a great number of women, quite frankly. I was with a discussionist woman down at Coffee Call last week, and they raised that question. They weren't exactly sure what he said, but it looked like he was just making an affront to women. There's no real belief that the Democratic Party is out to take advantage or to nail women in some way. And so the way he said it, I think, helped the Democratic cause, and I think he's making a mistake in doing so.
Well, the Republicans, Mitt Romney, lost the female vote by 12 percentage points in 2012, and that cost him the election against President Obama. What kind of play will this issue, will these assortment of issues have on the Senate race between Mary Landrieu and Bill Cassidy?
Well, it's the national agenda is going to set this tone, and it looks like the Republicans are just going to nail Mary Landrieu, and the whole focus is going to be Obamacare in terms of her being in lockstep with the president. Barack Obama's popularity around the nation is not very good, but at an all-kind low edge in Louisiana, just like David Vitter wrapped Charlie Malalsaw, wrapped the president around Democratic candidate Charlie Malalsaw in the last U.S. Senate race. I think the Republican strategy will be to wrap Barack Obama around Mary Landrieu this time around. And it's going to be a pretty effective strategy. I don't see 8 or 10 issues out there. Landrieu's going to try to the Democrats are going to try to throw a lot of mud at Cassidy on being a little bit more liberal and then becoming more conservative, being a little wishy-washy. But quite frankly, I don't see a lot of issues. I think it's going to be a very simple, you're for Obama, you're not for Obama, you're for Medicare and not for Medicare.
Back with Jim Brown in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Jim Brown is our guest, elected to office statewide in 1979, Secretary of State. 1983, reelected, then lost a race for governor in 87. Elected insurance commissioner in 1991, 1995, 1999, 2000, no. 91, 95, 99. Okay, 2975633, 877-217-5757. Jim Brown's a fairly good handicapper, and of course he's a man with knowledge about politics and other things. As a world champion relay participant with Bob Hayes, Rob Boston, and Paul Warfield. That's high cotton. What about the Super Bowl? Denver is now a 2.5-point favorite.
I'll tell you what, that... I wish they weren't playing in the giant stadium. And by the way, if you want to stay warm, you can get a box or a couple of boxes for sale. They're about $1,100,000 for your own box with own heating up there. And so you can stay nice and warm if you want to spend over $1 million. Peyton Manning is a Louisiana kid. If he weren't with Denver, I'm not sure I'd be so involved. But I'm certainly for Denver, with the Manning family being really our first family of Louisiana sports. And so I'm for Denver, but it's going to be a heck of a game. I sure hope it doesn't snow like apparently it's going to do here tomorrow in Baton Rouge, but I sure hope the weather is pretty nice to so we have a real lively game.
All right. If Peyton wins, it'll be 9 times in 48 Super Bowls that a Louisiana quarterback, Louisiana-born quarterback, has prevailed more than any other state. And the irony is that Peyton Manning went to the University of Tennessee, played there 4 years, Heisman Trophy runner-up, never played at Tiger Stadium, likely will never, ever play at Tiger Stadium, barring something really unusual. But Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seattle Seahawks, played in Tiger Stadium.
I didn't know
that. He did. He went to the University of Pacific. It was a star defensive back, and he was defending against Bertram Hayes Jones in 1972 in Tiger Stadium. How about that?
And a heck of a coach for Seattle, done a heck of a job. Right. If I could say one thing back on the politics.
Well, hold on. We're going to get to that, but I want to get to a few folks who have been waiting patiently.
Good, sure.
Ray and Coffee Call. Ray, good morning. You're on with Jim Brown. Good morning, Ray. All right.
Always appreciate it. My question, based on Jim Gill's column, which I thought was excellent, by the way, on marijuana. And, by the way, I don't drink or smoke marijuana. But I think we really have to redo our national laws because marijuana is considered a controlled substance. And then if we want to change our state laws, first of all, we should get our national representatives to change the national law. I'd like to hear Mr. Brown address how we could get that taken care of.
Yeah, and Ray, that's a good point because it's a national problem, but the Justice Department, the Obama administration, doesn't want to touch it. What they're saying is the laws are on the books, it's illegal, but we're not going to enforce the law. So if you folks on the local level want to do something, we're going to turn our heads. That's not the way to run a country, and I think you're right. This is a national issue with national implications, and it should be dealt with along those lines, but it's not, and so therefore Colorado just legalized and are selling pot there, and the discussions in Louisiana, so it's going to be a state-by-state thing. By the way, tell my wife hello down there at Coffee Call this morning. She's down there and said she may listen, but she's down there drinking coffee with you, Ray, and I appreciate you calling.
Hopefully they have it piped in. Jim in Kenilworth. Hi, Jim. You're on with Jim.
Jim, I'd just like to ask you a question. How come that General the Governor had no money for education or health care, but General the Candidate all of a sudden has a pocket full to throw out?
You mean as far as just what happened recently? Well, look, I've been in that process. I was in the budgetary process for years and years. You can find money for what you think is important. We are spending a ton of money. Do you know how much money we've spent to give Tom Benson to run the New Orleans Saints state money? Now, get this. No other state gives a professional football team any money. Green Bay Packers don't get any money at any level except they do it themselves in Green Bay. Not one penny of federal or state money. We've given $500 million to the New Orleans Saints. Now, look, I love the Saints, and I want them to stay here, but it comes down to a question of priorities, doesn't it? I can go down and down and down with you with all these small nonprofit groups that have gotten millions and millions of dollars. So it's a question of priorities, and the legislature, I don't put it all on Jindal. There's a legislative responsibility to take this budget and to make it work and to set these priorities. The legislature has abrogated its responsibility. They've turned it all over to the governor, and they pretty much do what the governor says. I think it's terrible. We don't have three branches of government. We've got two branches of government in this state. So, yes, Jindal sets the priorities, and I think he's not been responsible in terms of how he set those priorities, but the legislature is just as much at fault.
Keith in Sherwood Forest. Hi, Keith. You're on with Jim Brown.
Hey, I'm a fan of both of the Jims. Always appreciate Jim Brown's opinion on matters related to our state and city. Jim, I wonder if I could get you to comment on the St. George issue and what you see the immediate effects on the city of Baton Rouge if if it goes through and St. George becomes its own city?
You know, I wrote a lengthy column last week. I write a column for about 80 newspapers in the state, some 300 across the country, about secession. Went back to constitutional principles, whereas if a certain group of people want to secede from the Union, if they want to secede from their state, if they want to secede from their city, that philosophically they ought to be allowed to do so. And so being more libertarian, I think that, you know, people have a right to set their own destiny. Having said that, let me tell you my opinion. If the St. George situation is successful, that will be good for those folks. It's going to turn Baton Rouge into another Detroit is what it's going to do. The tax base won't be there, and Baton Rouge will suffer dramatically if that happens. But that may be a consequence of what the people vote on. The people have a right to vote. But my personal opinion is it would be devastating to Baton Rouge, although philosophically, I think that any group has a right to vote in terms of what they want to do. So I hope you don't see that as being inconsistent. I'm just telling you what I believe, but also what the consequences are. I think the consequences would be disastrous for Baton Rouge.
Do you think it'll pass? What? Do you think it will pass?
I don't think it will pass. I think you're going to see the chamber and a huge effort to get into the election process. And just from the look of the polls I've seen, it's pretty close, but it looks like the opponents are a little in the lead out that way. But again, I really haven't gotten into the minutiae, but I'm more looking at the philosophy of whether those folks have the right to do so. Yes, they do, but there are consequences both for St. George that I don't think are positive and for the city of Baton Rouge.
All right, here's Alexis in Beauregard Town, and I think referring to what you were about to mention a moment ago. What happens to the loser, Congressman Cassidy or Senator Landrieu, in the U.S. Senate race? What's the next step?
And that's an interesting question. I talked when we first started about a three-tier approach. Mitch Landrieu, if he's elected mayor, will be a player in the congressional and the state elections. But let's assume that Mary Landrieu gets beat, or Cassidy, either one. They will have gotten tremendous statewide coverage. They will have a lot of friends who felt like bad for them they did not win. And either one of those losers could be a viable candidate for governor in the next election. And then you see, let's assume that Vitter wins. He's got to give up his Senate seat. He appoints the replacement until the next election. You could have a Donnybrook of an election for U.S. Senator in 2016. So if one of these candidates loses, Mary Landrieu, who's fairly young, and as is Bill Cassidy, Dr. Cassidy, either one could be a viable a player in a future election, as could this fellow Rob Manis, the colonel. You know, he's a very attractive guy, not going to win, but he might be in a position to get elected to a statewide office based on his showing in the U.S. Senate race. So this whole domino effect is really fascinating in this compressed three-election cycle that we're about to embark on.
The Daily Reveille has several responses about David Vitter's entry into the governor's race in today's edition. It's well done. I'll read a few. Here's one that's pro-Vitter, saying after announcing his intention to run for governor, Vitter has all but won his position despite past personal failings. In a state where there is literally one liberal left standing, it is unlikely that any Democratic challenger would actually beat him. Maybe his experience with D.C. will give him the ability to strong-arm the legislature into making the changes necessary so budget cuts can be made somewhere besides higher education. Here's another one from Joshua, saying if Vitter becomes governor, it will be the last nail in the coffin of former Louisiana Governor Huey Long's legacy. Vitter claims to support the Constitution, but he voted for the Patriot Act reauthorizations twice, was against the building of a mosque near Ground Zero. He champions family values and personal responsibility, yet he was a client of D.C. prostitutes. He asked for forgiveness for his sins of infidelity, but wants to punish poor people for taking advantage of a welfare glitch caused by a government shutdown, one that he supported. Who's right, Jim Brown?
Well, Vitter's got to make his case, I think both parties are right. I think that his ties in Washington could be of help if he'd use those ties. On the other hand, Bobby Jindal has certainly not used his ties in Washington. He's pretty much been running against Washington the whole time he was governor. But the ties in Washington will certainly be a plus for Vitter. Same people have a problem with his personal life that don't want to forgive him after all these years. Sanders. That's going to be an issue in the campaign. I don't think there's a coronation for Vitter. I think that, number one, David Vitter carries some grudges. He's a hard guy to deal with. You're either for him or against him, and if you're against him, he carries that very strongly. So he's got a cadre of legislators that he's supported with campaign contributions, and he's trying to build his niche right there, and I think he's got some healing to do. It'll be interesting to see if he'll do that healing. If Vitter comes back and tries to make amends for some of the tough allegory that he's carried on and some of the tough things he's said, then you got to give the devil his due. Now, unfortunately, and I say this unfortunately, one of the big advantages Vitter has is money. He now has gotten approval of a super PAC that can spend money in Louisiana on his behalf, where you can give up to $100,000. Jim, I think...
Per year.
And his lawyers are trying to get a ruling that throws out that cap, saying $100,000 is not enough money for these people to be able to give. I think it's just outrageous. And Buddy Romer is someone that's this upright, that money is the mother's milk of politics. It's wrong. It's caused so much of the problems in the system. So I'd like to see those limits. You know, my personal opinion, you can only give money if you're a registered voter in the district in which you live. If you're going to run for mayor, you can only take money from people in Baton Rouge. If you're going to run for governor, only registered voters in the state in which you live.
You couldn't take money from people in St. George?
Well,
actually, that would be part of the parish.
Not if you're running.
That'd be part of the parish. So yeah,
right now
still,
you could. Right, yeah, now okay. You could.
All right. Heather asked the question about Senator Vitter and whether or not he is a palatable candidate for the governor of Louisiana. Will his past sins matter? Will his past transgressions, will they matter in this campaign?
Well, you can go back to Edwin Edwards, and he overcame transgressions and was elected governor on four different occasions. Number one, I found that, and you know, I had my problems in Louisiana politics. So I had
You were elected while you were under indictment.
That's right. I'm a little irritant with the federal government. I found that people have been very forgiving. They listen to your story. Now, in my case, I didn't ask for forgiveness because I got a really bum rap of injustice. And I've said that case very strongly, written books about it, talk about it all the time. But people, if you say, look, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, which was what Vitter did, he was very upfront about it. Obviously, people have let that go because they overwhelmingly reelected him this last time around. Will it be an issue in this coming campaign? Of course it'll be. But he's already crossed that barrier, and I don't think that's going to be that big of a ring around his neck, quite frankly.
You and I are old enough to remember when it was a kiss of death to be from New Orleans and run statewide. Now we got the governor who came out of, he's from Baton Rouge, but he was elected from Metairie, Kenner, Bobby Jindal. We've got both U.S. senators who grew up in New Orleans, four statewide elected officials elected from the New Orleans area, Tom Shedler, Jim Donilon, John Kennedy, Mike Strain. Now New Orleans seems to be producing a lot of prominent politicos.
Well, number one, they've kind of gotten together, if you will. It used to be that you were either a Chet Morrison Democrat down in New Orleans, or you were on the other side. You were a long, you're an anti-long. But New Orleans used to stay very, very divided. But what's happened is the whole greater New Orleans area has kind of gotten together behind those particular candidates. Also, the demise of the Democratic Party, you see in St. Tammany Parish, in Jefferson Parish, most of the surrounding areas, Plaquemine Parish to New Orleans, you've had a heavy concentration of Republicans, which primarily has benefited those Republicans in office. So the dynamics have changed, and it's very tough for a redneck like me to get elected. I'd have a tough time. Faraday is my home, and I was successful in making that switch, but it's tough for a North Louisiana candidate in this day and age.
Well, since Buddy Romer was elected governor in the year in which you ran against him in 87, have we had a governor from north of no, we haven't.
Mike Foster and
Edwin Edwards,
South Louisiana governor.
Mike Foster, Kathleen Blanco, Bobby Jindal.
So. And Edwards started that trend of trying to unite South Louisiana, did it so very, very effectively when he first won his office. But I think the breakdown within the whole greater New Orleans area, the Republican gathering, number one, and you didn't have the longs and the anti-longs and the way it all broke down, that's where the population is. You know, two-thirds of the population is below I-10. And so as a consequence, it makes sense that there would be those elections.
Another question from a listener. Jim Bernhardt, according to Mike, would be able to spend dollar for dollar with David Vitter if he ran from his personal war chest. Is he a potential candidate for governor?
You know, Jim Bernhardt was the former chairman of the Democratic Party in Louisiana.
He was.
And had some interest, but I think that interest has waned. I think he's enjoying making money, and which he's continuing to do once he sold the Shaw Company. He'd be a very formidable candidate, and a number of people on the national level have talked to him about it. But I haven't seen him do the things that you would expect him to do, getting out, speaking to chambers of commerce around the state, making those statewide connections. I don't think deep down in him he has that drive to actually get into the mess, and it's certainly a mess in Louisiana politics.
So the Democratic Party, in order to get a candidate in a runoff, will quite likely need to run one major candidate. Will it be John Bel Edwards? Will it be Mitch Landrieu, Mary Landrieu? Or could we have multiple Democrats?
Well, John Bel Edwards is an interesting guy. He's over in the Hammond area, over in Tangipahoa. His father was the sheriff over there, a very popular sheriff. And he's running as a Democrat, starting to raise some money. He'll be a much more solid candidate than, say, 4 years ago when the young lady Tara Hollis ran with no money. Williams will have some, rather, Edwards will have some money. And I think he could raise up to $1 million. But still, Louisiana today is a red state, and it's going to be very, very hard for a Democrat, particularly with a very weak Democratic Party, to mount a serious challenge.
Yes or no? Are you still a Democrat?
I'm a Democrat, but an independent for all practical purposes, quite frankly.
Thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.